And you're on mute. You're on mute, Dave.
You still want me to go 30 minutes?
Yes, please.
All right. Dave Barge, alcoholic. Good to be with you folks tonight. Good to see all those birthdays. Down south here, when we have a birthday, we have a cake. We present a cake or a donut or something. And so I got to tell you, where there's cake, there's hope, right? Where there's cake, there's hope. And we have birthdays. And shows all of us that we can have a birthday. Shows all of us that the program here works. And I have to see that sometimes. I have to know that it works. I got up this morning to go to a wedding. And I had a plan to leave the house at 9 o'clock on time. And as my wife got dressed, she broke her fingernail. And I don't know if any of you men are married, but when my wife's dressed up and we're going to a wedding, she is not going with a broken fingernail. So then we had to go over to the nail place to get the nail repaired. And then I got to the wedding, which is 65 miles from my house, and 65 miles in LA traffic is a long ways. We got to the wedding. The wedding was 2 hours late. So I had to tell everybody there, we'd have to learn to ride the horse in the direction it's going. And we just have to ride with this and it's going to be okay. And there were some people really upset that the wedding and the caterers, the food was, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. And then we came home and I got a bunch of stuff going on. I handled that. But then I know I've got to be on this meeting at 6:45. It's an Al-Anon meeting. It starts at 7:00. They will be on time. Without a doubt. They said 7, they meant 7. So I have to learn to ride the horse in directions go. That's the way it all goes, isn't it? So it's good to be here. Good to see some friends here. All right. I think that when we talk about alcoholism, we're all in the same storm. We're all in the same storm. We're just in different lifeboats. And I'm in the lifeboat called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my lifeboat, and it's been good to be there. And I'm glad I'm out here in this storm with people in their own lifeboats that we all kind of do this together. I don't know, I was thinking with all the readings and stuff, I come from a family of drinkers. And what in my family thing, it was all the men were drinkers and none of the women. All the men and none of the women. And I remember when I was a little kid, the men would do some mean, nasty stuff to the women. And I'd always want to protect the women. I used to get my uncle and as a little kid and I'd wipe off the lipstick and stuff because he was going to get in a fight with my aunt. And I'd try to get my grandpa drunk. So if he would drink a little bit, and he'd go to sleep. And then if I could get my grandpa drunk, then he wouldn't be hollering at my grandma. And I had a stepdad that I wasn't handling really good. And I stepped in between him and my mother and my stepdad who liked to do bad stuff to me. He put me in a washing machine. One of those old ringer types, and he turned the washing machine on. And I spun around there for a while and almost ripped my arm off, and I was in pretty bad shape. And I was in Detroit, Michigan, where I was born, and they sent me from Detroit to Saugus, California, close to where I did the wedding today. And I lived on a hog ranch. I lived 13 miles from the nearest building and 2 miles up a dirt road, a hog ranch, 10,000 head of garbage fed hogs, raw garbage. And it was one of my jobs, earn my keep there, to go out with the men who worked on the ranch and get a pitchfork and feed those hogs before I went to school. We would wait for the trucks to come in. And while we were waiting, they would pass that bottle of tequila around. They'd all take a big slug of that tequila early in the morning. And I was all stove up a little kid, but I wanted to be one of the men. I wanted to do what the men did. I want to be part of it. You know, that's going to be my new family, maybe. You know, I'm going to have something here. I'd beg, give me that tequila, give me that tequila. They'd all laugh at me and pass it on. And then one day they gave me the tequila and I hit the tequila like the men did. I took a big slug. Oh my God, it come out my ears, my nose, just burnt all the way down. How do we drink that stuff? And then one of the worst things in my life happened then. They laughed at me. I'm a little kid and I don't know where it come from, but I didn't want to be laughed at. Didn't like being laughed at it. So I would do my chores and I'd go home and then I'd come back. A few days later, I hit them with the tequila again and the same thing happened and they laughed at me again. So then I'd go down, I'd walk the 2 miles on a dirt road, go to school, come home. They'd be out in the pens, garbage in, garbage out. So it's a full-time, 7-day-a-week job for those guys. I'd sneak in their little houses and I'd get the tequila and I'd practice drinking that tequila so I could hold it down. Just practice. And the day came where I could hold it down, I could keep it in. And I'd go out there and ask you for the tequila, and they'd give me the bottle, and I'd take a drink like they did, like the men, only bigger. You had to be bigger. Couldn't just be the same size. I'd hit that tequila and show them I could handle it. And so I could be one of the men, so I could do what the men do. And they weren't real impressed with that because they would fight me for the bottle. But I got where sometimes the immigration would come and get these people off the ranch. And so I'd get in their little houses and I'd steal all their booze and all their guns and whatever they left behind. And so I had a little room full of stuff and I would sit there and drink. And I started drinking at an early age where I could drink and I got dreams and aspirations. I could drink and know I was going to go somewhere and be something. Alcohol did something for me. I not only had all the answers to life, I started having some of the questions. I got to be a complete person when I would drink. I could drink and read those books and the people would throw in their trash and I'd read those books and I'd say, oh man, I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to be somebody. I don't know who I'm going to be, but I'm going to be somebody just so I'm not David. I never wanted to be David. And sometimes I could drink and I think of the people around and I don't like people very much. People hadn't been nice to me in my life, but I could drink and sometimes it made me feel so good. I could take the pimples right off your face and you'd look okay to me drinking. And other days I'd drink and I'd put the pimples right back on your face because the anger that would have that would come back at me. So I remember drinking, it was probably on a weekend, and I heard music. You ever drink at night and you hear music? And up on the hill where they had their house, where these people live, it was a mariachi band going. And they were playing music and you could hear laughter and you could see the lights and you could see all the stuff going on. It was really something. And I was in that little shed by myself. I didn't have lights. I didn't have music. I didn't have family. I didn't have all those things. But I had a lot of tequila. And I remember as a young man drinking that tequila and thinking, you know what? I don't need nobody. I don't need nobody. Don't want nobody. Leave me alone. And that was the beginning of my drinkings. I got in a lot of trouble, was arrested a lot, and did a lot of crazy stuff when I was a kid. And we don't get lost in all that, but I did a lot of crazy stuff and behind booze. The day came, I had my own wife and my own kids, and I wasn't going to do to my wife what was done to my grandmas and my mothers and my aunts. I was going to be different. I was going to do to my kids what was done to me and you know what I seen. I'm not going to be those people. I'm not going to be those things. And the longer I drank, the more I was like everybody else, because I would get to drinking and forget all about the people around me. The only one that mattered is me, what I wanted. I could go 1 week, I'd go to the kids, take the kids to Little League and be there and be one of the coaches, and they all liked me. And I would go the next week and they would call the cops on me because I wanted to beat somebody up. I could go to the schools and do all kinds of stuff at the schools for my kids, and they all liked me until I started yanking the teachers over their desks. You never knew what mood I was going to be in, and I didn't either. It got in my house, I'd get up to go to work, and the kids would all hug me and kiss me because they didn't know whether Dad was coming home tonight or not. And Dad didn't know either. So I would go, and then you have to have all these reasons. So it had to be this childhood. It had to be this. It had to be that. It was never my drinking. Never my drinking. And I got where my, there was a time that I would come home. I would stop with the guys after work to have a quick one on my way home. And I'd get home at 10 o'clock or midnight. And then those things got to that. I would stop tonight on Tuesday and I wouldn't get home till Thursday or Friday. And then that got over the year that I'd stop on Friday night with the guys and I might not be home for a week or two or a month. And I had a wife and five kids. I had a little plastering business. I'm a construction worker. I had stuff going on in my life, but I just couldn't control things. I couldn't control my time and what I was going to do. Never thought anything of it was my drinking. Never thought it was my drinking. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in Charlotte, North Carolina. A couple of guys picked me up at my house. They had a 12-step column, took me to the meetings. Everybody was nice there, but in those days, they all wanted to shake your hand and touch you, put their arms around you, pat you, ask you personal questions, you know, hi, how are you? And I don't like people asking me questions. And at the end of the meeting, they passed the basket. You guys are smart. You got the money first here. They passed the basket. And at the end of the basket, they would hold hands and say a prayer. And I didn't, and I didn't do prayers. I was not on speaking terms when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. We were not on speaking terms. And so I started AA and somewhere around after Easter, 1969, you know, I was in and out of the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, 69, 70, 71, 72, in and out of the doors. Come a little late, leave a little early, because I didn't want to go through all those greeters and I didn't want to hold your hands and say prayers. So I would come to the meeting late, leave early, in and out, you know. I finally reached the point in my drinking that I wound up in a flop house in Gardena, California, in a place you don't take your mom and your sisters and your wife and your daughters, and one of those places. And I had everything in there to drink that you could have, and I would drink and drink and drink, and I got on a horrible drunk, a horrible, horrible, bad drunk for me. I always drank, you know, my reasoning was to be, not to be David, not to be David. And if I drank enough, I could get into oblivion and be somebody else. I could have these dreams and aspirations that things were going to change. That tomorrow, I'm going to get my life together. And I never wanted to feel the way I felt. Never. I don't like now. I can't live now, right now. I can't live right now. And I never wanted to feel the way I felt. And you drink enough tequila and I could change those feelings. And here I was in that room and I just drank and drank and drank. And I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. And I was David Barge. And I knew exactly what day it was, where I was at, and how I felt. And I reached a point where I couldn't go on drinking anymore, so I thought what I'd do is I'd kill myself. Because I've been to AA, I've been to psychiatry, I've been locked up in the mental hospitals, I've been in a lot of places. And, but I had a wife and five kids who's going to take care of my family. So what I decided to do is I'll kill my wife, I'll kill the kids, then I'll commit suicide. And then I drank on that for a while and said, no, what I'll do is I'll kill my wife and I'll kill my sons, and I'll let the girls fend for themselves, and then I'll kill myself. And then the next day or next hour, whatever it would be, I'd say, no, I'm going to kill my wife and kill my daughters, because guys are going to do to my daughters what I did to their daughters. And I couldn't decide who to kill and who not to kill and all that madness. And I heard the Serenity Prayer in my head. I said, geez, what I'll do is I'll go to AA and I'll sit with you guys. Some of you guys I sit with. I'll sit with you and I can decide who to kill and who not to kill. So I celebrate my AA birthday December 18th, 1972. Long time for a guy like me. I asked the old timers later when I came, and they all told me about a week before Christmas. And so that's a week before Christmas, the 18th. So I don't know if that's the day I came, but that's the day I celebrate. And so I see you have cakes and you're counting your time here. We all got a day. We all got a day. That's our day. Nobody can take that day away from us. And so I have my day that I can always measure myself. And I say, I can't go on today. I can't do this anymore. I can't do any more inventory. I can't go to any more meetings. I can't. If I remember that day that I came and maybe ask myself, how did I feel the day before I came? How did I feel the week before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Maybe see that day and see that guy that came to you. Maybe I could stay another day. Maybe I get through today. And so I'm shooting for midnight. So I have 5 days, 10 months, and 48 years of sobriety. And I'll give you my 48 years. I'll give you my 10 months, but my 5 days are for me. We do this one day at a time. And so that's what I got today. So I heard in those meetings that if you go to the meetings and you wash the coffee cups and set up the chairs, you can stay sober. Big thing in my day. And I went to the guy in the kitchen and said, I'm here to wash the coffee cups. And he said, no, this is my commitment or something. And I don't know what he said exactly, but I showed him my 38. So I got my first commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous to wash the coffee cups. And so I would go in there and wash the coffee cups, and I would set the chairs up. And I'd come a little late, leave a little early, and I'd sit in the corner. So I don't want to really talk to anybody. And I just kept doing that and kept doing that. And then pretty soon I go to other meetings because somebody in the meeting would say, hi, Dave, how you doing? And I don't know how they knew my name. And then I'd leave and go find another meeting because I knew if you knew me, you wouldn't let me stay here. Important thing in my story is that somewhere in my first month of going to this meeting, pants and shirt that I've been regurgitating in and defecating in and urinating in for a long time, long green filthy overcoat, so it was dirty to stand up by itself, my hand in my pocket on my 38, because it's going to kill your family, got to have your gun, don't you? Got to have your peace. And what's important about that? That's not important. What's important about that is they had a party at the club, a potluck. I don't really know what it was for. I couldn't have told you at the time it was a potluck, but it was a potluck. No, looking back on it. And the people made me a plate of food and put a little card table. And they put it right outside the door in the parking lot and made me a little plate of food. Now I'm a real alcoholic. Real alcoholics don't eat on empty stomach. But so I don't know about the food, but I have to think about when I'm at a meeting and then David Barch comes in smelling bad attitude, packing his gun. Am I going to get him a plate of food? Am I going to get him a chair? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? But I know that was done for me. So kindness has something to do with our programs, as far as I'm concerned, kindness. So I went to meetings. I was going to meetings, and a lot of meetings. I'm washing coffee cups and setting chairs up. I'm a straight row guy. I like my chair straight. I set the chair straight. I'm on it. And I'm doing that for a few months, and pretty soon I'm just full of anxiety. I just can't go on anymore. I'm just so full of anxiety. And God, I'm reading chapter 5, and I'm doing the chairs, and I'm doing the coffee cups, and I'm. And I went to a Sunday night meeting in Torrance, an old speaker meeting at an old club. It's not even there anymore. I went there early. I just was so full of anxiety. And these two old timers went and picked up this new guy and brought him to his first meeting. He hadn't been to an AA meeting. And he brought this new guy to a meeting, and the old timers went home, and the wife called back. One of their wives called back and said the old timer had a heart attack and died. And I went up to the new guy coming in his first AA meeting, and I asked him his name. I was standing over him like he was sitting in a chair. I asked him his name, and he told me, I put my 38 right in his mouth. I said, if you ever drink, I'll blow your head off. To honor the old guy that had picked him up, right? It makes sense, I think. Made sense to me at the time. So what I'm telling you that is the next day at the noon meeting, 12, 15 people, the ladies, the old gray-haired ladies like me, the old gray heads, said they want to talk to me after the meeting. But I said, geez, they finally recognize my talents here. So I met them after the meeting, and four or five gals and a couple guys standing sort of behind. We sat there. I'm waiting for all the pats on the backs and all the good stuff I'm doing. And these old gray-haired grandmas, they started cussing like you wouldn't believe. I didn't know grandmas knew those cuss words. They just cussed and cussed and cussed and embarrassed me. And they said, David, this is what you sound like when you talk. We know what you're being, but we don't know what you're trying to say. And here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn a new language. And we want you to learn this new language with us. Look me right in the eye and told me that. And the other ones over here said, David, we see that gun in your belt. We're afraid of you. We're afraid you're going to go crazy and shoot all of us. We're afraid to talk around you. We're afraid to do anything around you. We're afraid to laugh. And we don't want you to bring that gun to meetings anymore. Take it up to Kent's meeting in Concord, but they can't bring it here. David, you got to get a sponsor. I said, I don't want a sponsor. I did this all by myself. I got here. I don't need any help. They said, yeah, David, you have to get a sponsor. So they sort of pointed to this old guy. So I said, you want to be my sponsor? He said, yeah, you get your big book. You can come to the house Monday night, 7 o'clock. We're going to read the book and do the steps. And I said, well, I already did all that. And he said, you come to my house 7 o'clock Monday night and bring your big book. And he turned around and walked away from me, which I thought was kind of rude, I was at his house Monday night, 7 o'clock. We went in and sat at his little table. He didn't offer me coffee, water, nothing. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. We got some ground rules. And I said, okay, what's that? He said, you can't bring your gun to meetings anymore. And I was going to ask him, do you mean the 38 in my belt or the 32 I carry in my boot? Because everybody knows two guns is better than one. But I said, that's probably a dumb question. So I didn't ask him then. But he said, I want you to bring the guns to the meeting. I said, yeah, I'll try not to do that. He said, I'm not asking you to try. I'm telling you, don't bring your gun to meetings anymore. You don't need your gun here. Ain't nobody wants bad for you at Alcoholics Anonymous. Ain't nobody after you here. Don't bring your gun to meetings anymore. It's okay. He said, if I'm going to be your sponsor, you got to stop taking the money out of the basket. I said, who told you I'm taking the money out of the basket? He said, everybody knows you're taking the money out of the basket. Hell, I thought it was slicker than that. He said, tomorrow when you go to the meeting, you put a little money in the basket. If you don't put nothing in, you get nothing out. You put a little money in the basket and you put a little extra for how much money you've taken. And I said, well, I don't know how much money I've taken. He says, you put a little extra and I'll tell you when to stop. 5 days and 10 months and 48 years, they haven't told me to stop. I don't think I've said, if I'm going to be your sponsor, you can't sit in the corner by yourself. You got to sit with the rest of us. And I said, man, I don't want to sit with all those people. And he told me, I don't want to be your sponsor either. But if I'm going to be your sponsor, you're going to sit with the group. You're not going to sit off by yourself anymore. And at the end of the meeting, we hold hands and say a closing prayer. And I want you to hold everybody's hands. I said, I don't do prayers. And I don't hold people's hands. He said, at the end of the meeting, we hold hands. And we say the prayer. You don't have to know the prayer. You don't have to believe the prayer. But you hold everybody's hands, be part of the closing group. And you listen and you'll learn about the prayer. I said, I ain't going to do that. And he said, come on, let's go down to the bar. I'll buy you a drink. I said, man, I thought you'd be my sponsor. Help me not to drink. He said, David, you want what we have? You'll do what we do here. You want to continue to do what you do. And you're the guy that's been in and out here. You're the guy that's here carrying guns right now. You're the guy who won't sit with anybody, won't talk to anybody. So you want to change that, you're going to have to do what we do. And if you want what we have, you'll do what we do here. Yeah. So those of you that have been around here know that all that changed my life. Changed my life. A view of some life, of a view of looking at something like I had never seen before. And we got into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we all somewhere share in. Sponsor says, let's work the first step. And I said, well, I already did that. And he said, well, what's the first step? I said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. He said, yeah, but what's the first step? Well, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. But what is the first step? I thought I got an idiot for a sponsor. So I said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives become unmanageable. He said, no, that's what the step says. That's what the step says. But we're talking about alcoholism here. Powerless over alcohol. And that your life is unmanageable. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you? That this is the beginning of the first step. I want to tell them about my Hell's Angel days. I want to tell them all the stuff I did. I got stories. I got stuff. Sponsor said, any fool can do foolish things. Doing stuff that you're ashamed of don't make you alcoholic. We're talking about admitting that you're powerless over alcohol and your life's unmanageable. What did you do to do that? What does that mean to you? And then he asked me, he said, did you ever tell anybody you weren't going to drink today? I said, yeah. Yeah. He said, what happened? I said, many times I drank. After I said I wasn't going to drink. Who'd you tell? I told my grandma, I told my mom, I told my wife, I told my boss, I told the kids. You know, promised the judge. Yeah, I told a lot of people. And I meant it when I said it. Meant it. How many times I tell my wife, give me one more chance. One more. I learned my lesson. I'm going to straighten up. Man, stick with me one more day and we'll get it together. How many times did I do that in my lifetime? How many times? And meant it every time. He said, if you told yourself and you promised all those people you weren't going to drink and you drank, would that say to you that your word's no good and that your life's unmanageable? I said, yeah, I guess it would. I thought that was kind of rude, him saying that. He says, who else did you ever tell you wasn't going to drink? Not today. And I said, I didn't really know who he meant. He said, you ever tell that to yourself? Man, how many times did I say, not today, not today? I promised my wife I wasn't going to drink today, or my grandma, or my mom, people that mattered to me. I promised myself, not today, not today. This time I'm going to show up. This time I'm going to keep my word. This time I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to drink today. And I wound up drinking again, over and over and over again. So my sponsor said, maybe that's got something to do with being powerless over alcohol. See, so I found out for me that I'm powerless over alcohol, I'm powerless over the people in my life before I take the first drink. I thought all my powerlessness came after I started drinking. I thought the way I treated you was after I started drinking. Because I never saw the way I treated you before then, the way I was around in your life. Powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. And I got it from somebody else. I got it from hanging out with people like they're on the Zoom with me tonight. Went through... had to do the second step, And I said, I'm not doing that. It's got to do with God. He said, no, it's got to do with power greater yourself. It could be anything you want to be. But around here, you got to have a power greater yourself. And we would talk about that. Why don't we do this third step? And I said, I ain't doing it. You know, me and God ain't on speaking terms. I'm not doing all this God stuff. He said, yeah. I said, how are you doing holding hands in the prayer? I said, I'm holding hands, but I ain't saying the prayer. He said, well, I want you to go just to the meetings, just to the meetings where they say the Lord's Prayer. I want you to hold hands at the end of the meeting, and I want you to say the Lord's Prayer. My Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Give me this day my bread. Forgive me as I forgive, and to make it a personal thing. And he said, so the times they do the Serenity Prayer or any other prayer, you could just hold hands. But when they do the Lord's Prayer, I want you to say it to yourself, my Father. And I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard, but I went and did it. And somewhere got third step stuff going there. Got in touch with this power greater myself, somebody that I could call God. Just doing that prayer, saying it over and over and over again. My sponsor wanted me to do a four step and write it down. I said, I didn't go to school. Yeah, I got married when I was 16 to a little 14-year-old girl. I was in the ninth grade, so I didn't do a lot of schooling. He said, I don't spell good, and I don't write good. He said, it's not a spelling contest. You write your four step, and you just start writing it. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I don't really like witnesses, you know. I don't want to write down all this stuff. How am I going to admit to you stuff that I don't even want to admit to me? And do all this, write this stuff down. And he said, no, we're going to do this. So we had a big battle. So my sponsor told me a story about a drinker. So some of you have experienced this story, I guess. Guy's at home drinking, and he ran out of booze. He ran out of booze. And he said, oh, my God, the liquor store is going to close. So he ran down to the store, a package store. So that's a Southern story. Ran down to the package store, and he got him a bottle of hooch. He came home, always good bourbon. And he got home, and he got right to his front door, and he was going in. And his big dog got him and just grabbed him by the leg and just started biting his leg and just trying to chew his leg off. And he was trying to kick the dog off and not drop his bottle and kick the dog off. And he finally got the dog off him. And he got in the house and shut the door, and his leg was all bleeding, and his pants were all ripped, and he was trying to stop the blood, and it was just really getting him. And he went over and he poured him a water glass full of booze, and sitting there drinking, he was trying to stop the blood. There's a knock on the door. He opened the door. It was a policeman. The policeman said, you're the guy who got bit by that dog, right? The guy said, yeah, look at my leg. That dog tore me up. I can't stop the bleeding. And the officer said, you know what? That dog has rabies, and we're going to have to take you down to the hospital, and you're going to have to get rabies treatment. And our guy said, you know, leave me alone. Just get out of my house. I don't care about all that. And the officer said, look, if you've got rabies and you don't get treatment for it, you will die a horrible, horrible, painful death. You do not want to die of rabies with no treatment. It's a horrible, horrible, painful death. And our guy said, I don't care. Get out of the house and leave me alone. And when he sat down, filled his water glass up, and he was looking, he got him a pad and pencil. He wrote down all the names of the people he wanted to bite before he died. Then he wrote up another list of the people, if they had rabies, might want to bite him. And my sponsor said, I know you got no hangups, and you got no resentments, and you got nothing's wrong in anywhere in your life. But if you had rabies and was going to die a horrible, horrible, painful death, who would you like to bite first? You got anybody? And I said, yeah, I could make that list. And he said, good, let's make that list. And we could start there and work on your resentments right there. We could see where it is. So I've been pushed and pulled and conned and whatever way, because somewhere people like you and some of you gave me the power to show up. The power we need is the power to show up. And when we show up together, things can happen. Big things could happen. So I'm the guy that came here with a little red wagon. And it was full of my hurts and my pains and my resentments, full of my shame, all the stuff that we all have in our wagons. And I sort of pulled that wagon around behind me metaphorically. And every once in a while, I'd get something good would happen. And I could rearrange the anger and the resentment and the fears and the hurts and the pains. I could rearrange it in the wagon and feel better about myself and about life. Think I had a chance. and always had the same stuff in the wagon. Like coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and having a sponsor that was willing to work with me and willing to stay with me and having people that cared enough about me to show me how to do this, I've been able to remove stuff from the wagon, to remove it. All the stuff that I carried for years, I don't have to carry anymore. I don't live in that world anymore. And I found out that I went to AA and said, live one day at a time. Like everybody else, live one day at a time. How do you live one day at a time when you're carrying all your yesterdays with you? You know, living one day at a time when I got all the resentments from my childhood and busted marriages and busted cops and all the stuff, all the shame. How do you live one day at a time and do that and be there? So I would feel better. But when you take the stuff out of the wagon, I found out what happens now, when I live now. So that's where God lives. See, God don't live tomorrow or yesterday. God don't live in all my shame. But God lives right now. And when I'm with you guys and I could live now, I could live with you right now, things work. I'm able to give and I'm able to receive. I'm able to stick my hand out to you and say, God, it's good to see you. I'm able to put my hand out so you could say to me, it's good for you to see me. I'm able to put my hand out and say, can I help you with anything? Anything I can do for you? When I could live in the now. And I know if I'm not living now, I always tell being with my driving, when I get to be an aggressive, assertive driver, I know that I'm carrying something from that I don't want to carry, something that's not good for me. So I try to stay in the now and try to do this. I'm not good, you know, it's not a 24-hour day thing. I haven't got there, but I try to do that and live in the now and be part of what you guys are. Kind of do what you do. I'll leave you with this. My sponsor, when you get a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous in the old days, you go to meetings where your sponsor goes. You don't go where you go. You go where he goes. And you get there 15 minutes early. And so I went to my sponsor's meeting and I was there and I got there early. He was sitting there and we were talking. And I got up and I started straightening all the chairs up. Straightening all the chairs up because they were not straight lines. And my sponsor said, what are you doing? I said, I'm straightening these chairs up. And he said, oh, is that your commitment? And I said, no, it's not my commitment. I've never even been to this meeting. I don't have a commitment, but I don't like crooked roads. And he said, well, maybe the person has that commitment likes crooked roads. You need to learn to love and support that person for the job they're doing. Sponsors tell you stupid stuff. How am I supposed to love and support somebody that's putting the chairs up crooked? You guys up north don't have any of those problems, but there's always somebody in the meeting that talks too much, or somebody doesn't talk enough, or somebody doesn't sit right, or somebody slurps their coffee, or somebody's doing something that I don't think they should be doing. And I have to remember that I have to love you for the job you're doing, who you are. And so I've been trying to practice that. It takes me a lot of practice sometimes, but it's good being here with you. And do not worry. Do not worry. Larsine will straighten up everything that I said. You have no problems here. Love you. Thank you.